From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. We've heard it over and over. Get your flu shot. If you're older than 6 months, get your shot. The flu can be more than uncomfortable. It can be fatal. What goes into that shot that inoculates against the virus? And why do we need a new one each year? Dr. Kathleen Neusel of the University of Maryland Medical School tells us why the influenza virus is a master of mutation, modifying its proteins as it replicates from season to season.
And so unlike measles virus, where we can get one vaccine and essentially it protects us against the same virus for decades, influenza is constantly changing.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Influenza can be fatal. Thousands die from it each year in the U.S. No wonder, then, that doctors recommend everyone over 6 months old get a flu shot annually. But if the flu shot is a vaccine, why is it necessary to repeat each year? And what goes into the concoction that inoculates a body against its virulent strains? Joining us today to provide some answers is Dr. Kathleen Neusel, professor and director of the Center for Vaccine Development at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. She's also director of the university's Institute for Global Health. Welcome, Dr. Neusel.
Thank you, Sheila. I'm happy to be here.
Why do we need to get a new flu shot each year?
So influenza virus is a very smart virus, and it has evolved to be able to change very quickly over time. And so unlike measles virus, where we can get one vaccine and essentially it protects us against the same virus for decades.
Because the virus
pretty much stays the same. Influenza is constantly changing. So the virus that we're seeing this year is slightly different than the virus we see last year and maybe significantly different than the virus we saw 2 years ago.
Well, so if the strains of the virus are changing like that, how is it decided which strains to use for each year's vaccine?
So there's a very extensive global surveillance system that tracks influenza virus, that gets specimens from people throughout the world and looks at these in a laboratory. And then there are committees that twice a year look at these strains and look at the molecular characteristics of these strains and pick the one that is circulating in the highest quantity and at the end of any given season. And that's what we use to make our vaccines for the following season.
Are the changes in sync with seasons? In other words, you mentioned looking at the virus at the end of a season. Does it kind of go dormant and then pick up at that same point the next season?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm simplifying it a bit, but there are multiple viruses that circulate. And there are something called surface proteins, and they're hemagglutinin and neuraminidase. But the most important part of that is that we abbreviate them H and N. So when you hear about H1N1 or H3N2 or H7N9, it's just describing these surface proteins on the virus that are really very important in being able to infect a human or another species. So if we develop antibodies to what's on the surface of the virus, we can block the virus and we can block the infection. So there are really many influenza viruses circulating during a given season, but generally one or two kinds predominate. And we actually have two new vaccines every year. It's even more complicated than that, one for the Northern Hemisphere and one for the Southern Hemisphere.
Because different strains are predominating in those two hemispheres?
Well, because it develops over time. So we have our winter here, We have viruses that are the most common. What's usually most common at the end of our season then is what becomes most common at the beginning of the Southern Hemisphere season and vice versa.
I wish our listeners could see the way your hands are tracing us from the Northern Hemisphere down to the Southern Hemisphere. But for example, in the Northern Hemisphere, the flu shot that I get in North America is also probably going to protect me if I'm in Europe?
It will protect you most likely if you're in Europe. If you were to travel to the Southern Hemisphere this summer, so our summer and their winter, we would likely recommend that you get another influenza vaccine in the spring to protect you for the Southern Hemisphere winter.
If it takes time to produce the vaccine, how far in advance does all of this need to happen to prepare for the U.S. flu season?
Yes. So this is where, again, the influenza virus is challenging. And it's challenging to make a vaccine in time against the influenza virus. So there are three or four strains of the virus in any given vaccine any year. We're moving in the U.S. from having three strains in every vaccine to having four strains.
Why?
Because we're finding that we weren't so good at guessing which ones will predominate. And so what we did was we just added a fourth strain. So we now have two A strains and two B strains in every influenza vaccine, rather than two A strains and one B strain, for which we would frequently guess wrong which B strain might be the most common to circulate. So one way that we have gotten around this issue of the ability of the virus to change is by adding more strains to the flu shot.
Can you just keep adding more strains? Could you have six in a vaccine? Could a vaccine try to stop six strains of the flu?
You could keep adding more strains. It's really a trade-off between how difficult it is to manufacture, how expensive it is to manufacture. For example, if we have one strain change, a manufacturer can generally incorporate that fairly quickly. If two or three strains change from the prior year, then they have to prepare. It's a 75% new vaccine, right? So a lot of it is the trade-off between what is practical and doable in time. You know, it's a race against the next flu season. And we don't know exactly when flu season will hit. Some years it's as early as November. Some years it's as late as February or March. So we have to be prepared every year by about September. And that's where the challenge comes in.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Dr. Kathleen Neuzel about how the flu vaccine is determined each year. Dr. Neuzel has also served as a technical advisor to the World Health Organization. So how is the vaccine produced and tested?
The influenza vaccine has been around for more than 60 years. And what happens is we take an influenza virus and we grow it in eggs, in hen's eggs. And then once the virus is grown in sufficient quantity, it's either deactivated in some way, it's killed in some way, or it's suspended in a way that we just take the piece of the virus that's important, that outer protein that I was talking about. So that's the traditional way that most of our influenza vaccines are made. So when a manufacturer understands the new strains for the year, they then have to grow them up in eggs, right? They have to produce it, and then they have to go through all those inactivation steps, purification steps, put the three or four strains together, and make a vaccine.
Why eggs?
Why eggs? Eggs are, we use all sorts of different cells or substrates to make vaccines, and it just happens that influenza virus grows very well in eggs. Now, a major advance in the last couple years for influenza is a new vaccine called a recombinant vaccine, which is made outside of eggs. It's not the virus that's grown. It's in a molecular way. We just make that outer protein of the virus. So the advantage here is that this can be done more quickly. For example, if there's a pandemic, The disadvantage right now is it's a new procedure. There's only one manufacturer, and so it's a more expensive vaccine. It's called Flublok. So we are moving the technology forward with how we make influenza vaccines. And after 60 years, we finally have at least one vaccine that's actually made out of eggs, which is a cumbersome process.
So my head is still trying to get around why, when we don't need a new measles shot every year, a new mumps shot, what is it about the flu virus that makes it such a master of mutation?
Well, there's a couple aspects of it. One is that outer protein that I've talked a lot about just makes a lot of mistakes every time it makes a new virus. And so those mistakes translate into differences that make it easier to infect new people and then give that virus an advantage over the virus that previously has been circulating. So if I make antibody to one type of flu virus and another one pops up by chance just because there's this high rate of mutation or mistake, then that virus is going to have an advantage and be able to infect people better because the antibody won't work as well. The other way that flu can really change, and this is very unique, is that it's DNA or RNA, right, that code for proteins, the same as humans have DNA and RNA. Influenza virus has RNA, and it's not a continuous strand. It's actually in 8 pieces. We call it 8 segments. And so if I get infected with one type of influenza virus and get infected at the same time with an influenza virus from a pig, let's say, those two can trade pieces of RNA, which causes major differences then in the new virus that's created. So this is how pandemics start, actually, when two influenza viruses trade pieces and come out with an entirely new influenza virus that nobody has antibody to.
You're describing a situation where a virus that was able to infect animals trades off with a virus that could infect humans, and presumably the new virus could infect humans.
Right. And so what we're learning, this is called reassortment. I mean, it's literally trading pieces of a virus with each other. We are learning that this probably happens a lot, but most of the time it's not an advantage to the virus. It's a disadvantage to the virus being able to either infect or grow or replicate. But it happens so many times that you get a situation where it is in fact an advantage. And then if that virus can be spread from person to person, you have an entirely new and different type of influenza virus. And that's what's caused most of our pandemics in the past.
So that's a reason to worry.
So that's a reason to worry.
Toward the end of last year, 2017, there was a fear of a deadly bird flu migrating through regions of China. What's the status of that?
So most human influenza viruses, again, we do H's and N's is how we describe them, are H1, H2, and H3, or N1 or N2. So those are influenza viruses that have adapted to humans. Bird viruses have adapted to birds, and we think that birds are probably the natural species for influenza. Birds carry lots of different types of influenza. They don't get sick from influenza, so that's an advantage, right? The virus can survive longer, can be passed from bird to bird. Now some influenza viruses make birds sick, but some birds just carry these viruses. Poultry are particularly infected with viruses. So there's an H7N9 virus that's been circulating in China probably for about 5 years. The recent concern is that we're seeing more cases, both in numbers and in how widespread it is through China, that it's become concerning that this could lead to a pandemic if it can infect more humans, be transmitted from person to person Right now in China, we believe it's mainly transmitted from live poultry markets and actual contact between birds and humans. If it's transmitted from person to person, then we begin to have real concerns about a pandemic.
And what do you do?
So what we're doing now proactively is our government has invested very heavily, not only in surveillance of these regular H1 and H3 viruses, but also in bird flu viruses. And we actually have stockpiles of vaccines in case these viruses spread widely and more effectively between humans. So, for example, we at the University of Maryland will be working with the government, with NIH, to test some H7N9 vaccines here in Baltimore. And there will be about 6 or 7 centers across the country that are also testing these vaccines to see if they're tolerated. You know, how much arm pain do they cause? Do people get any side effects? To see if they generate antibody to the vaccines. And then that way, if this virus does spread, we will be prepared and we will have a vaccine that we can very quickly roll out.
Wow.
Because as you've heard, if we wait until it's widespread and you have this whole process of growing it up in eggs and having to do the deactivation stage and do the purification stage, then it becomes too late. So it's better to have the vaccine ready if you can, before the virus really starts to spread.
There's a lot of suspense here. We need to take a break here. We're talking to Dr. Kathleen Neusel about how the flu vaccine is determined each year and why it's such a wily virus. Dr. Neusel has been a member of the Centers for Disease Control's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and the Pandemic Influenza Task Force of the Infectious Disease Society of America. This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. After the break, we'll ask about ways to protect yourself from influenza and debunk some myths about the flu shot. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about influenza and how the flu vaccine is determined each season. Dr. Kathleen Neusel, professor and director at the Center for Vaccine Development at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, is with us. The CDC reports that thousands of people can die from influenza each year. What is it about the flu that can cause death?
Well, influenza affects 10 to 20% of the population every year. For most people, it's a self-limited illness. It makes you feel very sick. We shouldn't get that wrong. But in most people, again, it's self-limited and they do fine. But particularly in certain vulnerable people, infants, people over the age of 65 or 70, and people in between with heart disease and lung disease, it can put them in the hospital or they can die from influenza. Part of that is their own reserve capacity, their ability to respond to a new infection, you know, on top of chronic conditions that they already have. But part of it is influenza is in itself a very serious respiratory disease. It causes a lot of damage to our respiratory tract and our mucosa and can cause problems with oxygen. You know, we've had 12 children die of influenza already this season, and the season is really in the U.S. The season is really just getting started. And as I said, most deaths are occurring in people over the age of 70.
What is the best way to protect yourself?
So the best way to protect yourself is to get an influenza vaccine. And as you mentioned at the beginning, everyone 6 months and older is recommended to receive an influenza vaccine in the United States. And for all the reasons we've discussed, you need to get a new influenza vaccine each year.
And if you get the flu, and haven't gotten the shot, does the flu itself, if you survive it, inoculate you from getting it again?
The influenza virus and infection will give you immunity and protect you. The problem is, again, that the influenza virus is changing. So it may protect you for a year or two. It's hard to say because the influenza virus is constantly changing. So you can get reinfected with influenza again and again and again in your lifetime because of this ability for it to change enough that it fools the body and the antibody doesn't work.
Some people think the vaccine makes you sick.
The influenza vaccine doesn't make you sick. We've done many, many studies. I've personally done these studies, and of course, they've been done by many others for decades. The most common side effect is a sore arm. So you will absolutely get a sore arm. But the influenza vaccine cannot give you influenza. Again, it's either a killed virus or a piece of the virus. And so it's impossible to get influenza from the vaccine. Now, if you think about it, if half the country, which is where we're at, gets the influenza vaccine each year, then by chance, there's going to be a percentage of people who get another virus or get sick within the couple days after they get the flu vaccine by chance. But when we do trials where we give half the people flu vaccine and half the people a placebo or a dummy vaccine, again, the main side effects we see are local side effects, sore arm, a little bit of redness, or a little bit of swelling at the injection.
It is January already. Too late to get a flu shot for this season?
It's not too late. In fact, it's probably the perfect time to get your influenza vaccine if you have not. Influenza is widespread in the South. We're seeing little trickles of it in Maryland, but the fact that it's widespread throughout the South and parts of the West tells us that it's likely heading this way. So this would be a really good time if you haven't had the influenza vaccine yet to get the influenza vaccine.
Is there anyone who shouldn't get a flu shot?
Well, children younger than 6 months of age, it's not licensed for them. It's really important that pregnant women get the vaccine because that's how babies are protected. There is transfer of antibody through the placenta. So for those very young babies who are likely to be sicker if they get influenza, the mom getting it when she's pregnant can protect them.
The mom getting a vaccine.
Exactly. And then, you know, very few people have serious allergies to the vaccine, and egg allergies we used to worry about. We worry a lot less about egg allergies, and we also have this new vaccine, Flublok, that's made outside of eggs. So we now have an alternative even for people with serious egg allergies.
How effective is the flu shot this year?
This year we don't know because there's simply not enough flu around yet to know. Most years, it's about 50% effective in keeping you from getting any type, any severity influenza. What we've learned more recently, though, is it's probably 70 or 80 and even up to 90% effective at keeping you out of the hospital or keeping you from dying from flu. So for any mild illness, it's not quite as effective. But for the more serious illnesses, the flu vaccine does better. Now, it's important that it doesn't do as well in very old people, in people with cancer, and that's where those of us who are healthy and spread flu come in. Because if the flu vaccine doesn't work very well in people with weaker immune systems, then we healthy people need to get the flu vaccine so we don't spread it to our grandparents, our friends with cancers, the two-month-old baby at home that's too young to get flu vaccine. So it's important for healthy people as well.
This is the herd protection.
This is the herd protection. And there aren't many people who can say they don't have any contact with someone with cancer or lung problems or older babies. You know, we all contact these people all the time.
Is it possible that there could ever be a one-and-done flu vaccine?
We would love a one-and-done flu vaccine. For the National Institutes of Health and the U.S. government, this is a top research priority. I don't think it's on the horizon in the next 5 years or so, you know, but it is absolutely a long-term goal, and it is the ultimate way to control influenza.
Thanks so much for talking us through this. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Dr. Kathleen Neusel directs the Center for Vaccine Development at the University of Maryland School of Medicine and the university's Institute for Global Health. We've been discussing the complexity of the flu virus and how the flu vaccine is determined each year. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we have information about where you can get flu shots in Baltimore City and County and other information to protect yourself from influenza this season. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.